never rests.
What is up, everybody? It's the Georgia Show. I'm Jake Rowe. He's Palmer Toms, and we're from Dogs HQ. Georgia's 2025 schedule is out. We're going to react to it. The transfer portal, day 4 of 21. We're going to talk about that. What's new with Carson Beck? It's been a while since we've had a chance, since we had a chance to kind of visit you in full on the channel and kind of give you a little timeline as to what's going on there. Maybe a little bit of something new. I don't know. Maybe let something slip out here that we know and can't say. I'm just playing. We don't really have that going on. Georgia's keeping this one pretty close to the vest, and Kirby's up to Kirby's old tricks, Palmer. But that 2025 schedule is out, and boy, did they drag it out on us. They went week by week, and boy, does it look weird. It is a weird, weird-looking schedule. Tennessee is Georgia's SEC home opener. Alabama is Georgia's SEC home opener, and the Bulldogs play Tennessee and Alabama in the first week of the season. First month of the season. Yeah.
Would be really impressive if they played them in the first week. I mean, yeah. talk about something for Kirby Smart to be upset with Greg Sankey. If he had to play Tennessee really and impressive. Alabama in the first week.
Yeah, that's true. I tell you what's really impressive. I screwed up two times in the first 30 seconds. I mean, just like two times in the first 30 seconds.
And Jake, it's actually three. It's a 20-day window, not 21 for the total.
That's true.
I've got a running tally over here of
three times. Now I'm going to say that they have to play Tennessee and Alabama back-to-back. They don't have to play them back-to-back. They get out bye week in there between them. But Georgia has four teams that have byes before them this year. Alabama and Florida are byes that Georgia shares with them. So they're both teams are going to be off the previous week. Texas is off and Auburn is off before they play the Bulldogs. All right, Palmer, out of everything that you've seen out of the schedule, what stands out to you?
I mean, the obvious is the home dates and the teams that they get to play, and we've known that, but I think that the way that it sets up with one in September, one in October, one in November is really exciting if you're a season ticket holder. It just could not get any better, in terms of what you're looking for here and when you can set your trips to Athens if you're a Georgia fan. I did some numbers this morning. So, Georgia has played three ranked teams. Jake, how many times do you think Georgia has played three ranked teams at home since 2000?
Huh. I mean,
it surprised me a little bit.
We're talking about ranked at the time?
Ranked at the time. Yep.
That was 2023.
Well, that was the last time, correct? Yes, that is the last time. How many times since 2000 have they done it?
Twice?
This will be the fifth time that they've done it. 2023, obviously 2020, we're expecting 2025, doing a little bit of projecting there that Alabama, Ole Miss, and Texas will all be at least in the top 25.
Right.
So if that plays out as we would expect, that would be a fifth time. The other times have been 2014, where they played Clemson, Auburn, Georgia Tech, 2013, where they played South Carolina, LSU, Missouri, and 2008, where they played Alabama, Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech. The average ranking of those teams across those seasons, 13.7, 13.7, 12.3, 17.3. Using this year's college football playoff rankings, Georgia's those three teams, Alabama, Ole Miss, Texas, comes out to 9.3. Georgia is hosting some really good teams, like three spots better in the rankings teams on average.
I mean, just think about the schedule that caused Kirby Smart to have that reaction to Greg Sankey's face. By the way, I believe Seth Emerson was telling me about this or somebody was telling me about this, that there was there's some talk there that the monitors weren't working up there and that Greg Sankey actually wasn't able to even hear what Kirby Smart said. I don't know if that's the truth or not, but either way, if you think about the strong, whatever it was, the frustration or whatever Kirby had going on to do that, Well, that schedule is just flipped over and it's at home this year. So that's the cool part. There's a lot of red on that schedule. Seven home games and you play a eighth game in the state of Georgia, a ninth game at a neutral site at the Georgia-Florida border. And then there's really three true road games. I mean, obviously playing at Tennessee and at Auburn is not easy. You know, November in Starkville was most miserable I've ever been. So I don't know if anybody, remembers that from 2022, but I do 100%. So it's just tough times, man, as far as going to Starkville there in November. But that Texas game, you know, getting Texas to Athens in November, that's pretty cool, being the last SEC game for the Bulldogs.
Were you surprised by that? Because I very much was. I mean, yeah, in terms of you look at the 24 schedule, and it felt like they put that Alabama game early with the potential of, ooh, these two teams might meet again in Atlanta, and we don't want it to happen twice within the same month. Well, obviously they didn't meet in Atlanta and it was Georgia and Texas, but they don't fear putting Georgia and Texas, you know, potentially playing.
What did I tell you in 4 weeks? What did I tell you last night when I was talking about how whenever we were trying to project this thing, you can't balance it out because there's too many good teams on it. At some point or another, it's going to be, I mean, unless they're going to give Georgia two road games or put Kentucky at home in November and give Georgia kind of a cake November schedule and really pack in October, I think you had to put Ole Miss, Texas, or Alabama, you know, right there, either in that Mississippi State or in that, you know, Texas slot. And I'm not even sure what those schools had beyond that. Does Texas – I know Texas is going to play that final weekend at Texas A&M. I'm trying to figure out if Georgia is Texas's seventh or eighth SEC game. I wonder – sixth, seventh, or eighth, I guess.
I would imagine, and I'm pulling it up, the Texas schedule. I would imagine they are definitely Georgia's sixth.
Georgia's eighth.
Texas is
ending the season with those three straight SEC games.
Georgia, Arkansas, A&M. So yeah. Georgia is the sixth SEC team that Texas will play. And look, you know, I think that's something that has worked out in Georgia's favor. I mean, you know, Bulldogs were able to sit back and relax and you know, say, hey, our hay's in the barn with our eight games that we've played. You know, they did it this year with Tennessee playing them in that, you know, middle of November and having two, you know, non-conference games. And Georgia's always going to have one non-conference game at the end of the year with Georgia Tech being that rivalry weekend. But I think that kind of worked in Georgia's favor of, you know, hey, obviously you can look back on it now and say, look, they were able to win. It's hard to say that they were able to rest up and get healthy because they, you know, played eight overtimes the week before that in a really, really tough Georgia Tech game. But it wasn't a Georgia Tech game that they had to win, knowing that they were already in the college or that they were already in the SEC championship. But, you know, you can look at it and say, hey, Georgia had two non-conference games, both of them being at home, that they were able to get a little bit healthier. I mean, look at the way that they got Dylan Bell back, you know, just like that. And that may have had to do with the injury more than it did the, you know, that recovery time. But Trevor Etienne, you know, not needing him in a, you know, vital SEC game. I think that having for Georgia playing that last SEC game, that eighth SEC game, and having two non-conference games after that, that very much worked out in their favor this year. And it's going to be interesting to see if it does next year as well, because look, they've got an opportunity to kind of just kick back, relax and say, all right, y'all go beat up on each other. Y'all let the chaos ensue. And all of a sudden, you know, we go from, I mean, I know what we were doing, Jake, sitting there like, oh, there's no way Georgia can clinch it today. Can they? Oh my gosh. Wait, Georgia can clinch it. Can they? I don't know. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, they're in.
Yes, in. Yeah. It was I think the big winner in that could be, if it turns out anywhere near what it was this past year, is the Georgia fan. Because having that week 13 game, you know, there to kind of bridge the gap between Texas or in this past year it was Tennessee, bridge that gap between that and clean old fashioned hate. And listen, you talk to a lot of Georgia fans, and I watched more football that weekend, and yes, you know, that especially and awesome. Then the following weekend with the Friday game. Getting a sitting there and watching and knowing that your hay is in the barn, and kind of watching and seeing how everybody else is going to put theirs in, is really fun. I mean, it's one of the underrated things about college football, I feel like. And you know, at that point, you are looking at standings because you're looking at the SEC, and you know, that gives you, I feel like, a spoonful of what makes pro football a lot more fun, which is scoreboard watching and schedule watching and all of that stuff to kind of figure out where are you going to be and what are you going to get in. And I tell you, I've kind of come full circle, especially with the committee treating, and the committee needs to do a better job of this from the jump, and getting it right from the jump. But I feel like with the way the committee did and treated teams that played in conference championship games this year and the way that all fell out, I think that now you do have more of an incentive to want to go to that SEC championship game, especially when you've played a schedule like Georgia's, because you know there's an opportunity there for some rest and recovery. And, you know, we'll see how it works out for Georgia. That's another thing, too, is everybody's talking about how good this is going to be for Georgia. Who knows? Who knows how good it is for Georgia? They may get, you know, they may add rust on top of what's already been what Bill Connolly said today was an extremely maddening Georgia team, but one that has a lot of promise, and we'll see kind of how that works out. All right, Palmer, what we need to work out this week is some prize picks, because not only is Georgia not playing and we can't pick Georgia, but Palmer, we're due. We are so due for a little bit of success in prize picks, for a little bit of to show a little bit of our skill. You want to talk about rust? We've shaken the rust off a long time ago. We're just still stepping in it and tasting it because it's all over us.
So Jake, I've picked out three Bulldogs in the NFL that will be playing primetime football. You don't have to, you know, deal with the chaos of Sunday NFL and, you know, 10 million different games going on at the same different time. We've got you with some primetime football to watch right here. Matthew Stafford playing Thursday night against the 49ers. DeAndre Swift playing Monday night against the Vikings. Brock Bowers playing Monday night against the Falcons, a game that many of you might be watching anyway. I've got two projections, and I'm going to leave the third one up to you, Jake. I'm going more on Brock Bowers receiving yards, 63.5 receiving yards against the Falcons.
He needs a bounce back. He had a slow week last week.
He did. He did. Had an incredible catch, and if I'm recalling there. Also, you know, just the fact that he's been breaking rookie records. So I'm going more on Brock Bowers, and I know that that's going to hurt for some Falcons fans that are watching him. The one that got away from the state of Georgia, DeAndre Swift, I'm going more on 12.5 receiving yards. Think the Bears might need some help in that game against the Vikings. And, you know, what's a better friend for a rookie quarterback than a running back right out of the backfield? So I'm going more there. Jake, I'm leaving this one up to you, though. Matthew Stafford, 245.5 passing yards against the 49ers tonight, Thursday night football. Matthew Stafford and the Rams, San Francisco 49ers, 245.5. Are you going more or less?
Man, the Rams have been playing such better football lately. But they're coming off kind of a score bonanza against San Francisco. Man, this one's tough because, I mean, Stafford with Kupp and Puka Nacua at his disposal, with the way they're running the ball, let's go over, man. Unders are not fun, dude.
I think we got beat by a Matthew Stafford less earlier in the season.
Yeah, man, listen, I'm not going to sit there and watch that game tonight. I'm not going to sit there and watch that game tonight with Puka Nacua on my fantasy team. Now, granted, I've clinched first place in my fantasy league. No big deal. You know, it's cool. But I have clinched first place. So I don't need Nacua to go off tonight, but I want to get the points lead. I'm like 2 points behind the guy who has the points lead in our league. So I would like to get that. I'm just two games up on the thing with the playoffs
coming. All right, so we're not
only can't root for Matthew Stafford, a Bulldog, to go under on Thursday night football. It's all we got tonight.
So we're not only rooting for Matthew Stafford, we're rooting for Jake's fantasy football team. We are going more on Matthew Stafford there, of a line of 245.5 passing yards. And you too can get in on the fun of Prize Picks. Use promo code DAWGS, D-A-W-G-S. for $50 on your first play of five, win or lose. It's a really fun way to get to stay involved in the games, and really fun way to play. You know, like we said, there's not a ton of, you know, college football action. You got Army Navy if you want to, you know, look ahead there and look at the projections. Bryson Daly, a really fun player to watch there. Did not know that Western Michigan was playing this weekend.
Palmer, we got some breaking news here. We got some breaking news, not Georgia related. Prize Picks,
DAWGS.
Yeah, Prize Picks, DAWGS. Check it out. An old friend of Georgia football, an old friend, foe, whatever you want to call him, a man named Dan Mullen has been hired as the next head coach at the University of Las Vegas. So Dan Mullen gets to go out to Sin City and coach the running Rebs. I knew he was up for that job. I'm very surprised that that hire happened so quickly, because I feel like Dan Mullen's making a lot of money doing what he was doing and didn't have to recruit.
I thought he loves recruiting, Jake.
Hey, maybe he thinks that. Maybe he made it
very well known that he had to that he just loved recruiting.
I tell you what, I would have loved to have coached Ricky White at UNLV from Marietta, yeah, Georgia. What a stud wide out there! And hey, Run Rebs had a good chance to play for some this year. That's why Barry Odom got hired, Jake, away.
While we're on the topic of coaching carousel, just I want to get your thoughts on the Bill Belichick hire.
I don't know. I mean, I don't hate it. You know, I do wonder, like, a guy that, you know, you hear a bunch of stories after him since he has been, since he, you know, didn't coach this year. You've heard a lot of stories about kind of how he demands professionalism and all that stuff. And I just wonder, how's that going to work out when that 18-year and 3-month-old rolls in there acting like a 6-year-old?
17-year-olds, Jake. Yeah. There's 17-year-olds in college.
Well, come on. Everybody doesn't have Ryan Williams, okay, or Joseph Jonah Ajayi. So they not everybody has those youngsters like that. But, yeah, I just – that one's part of – but listen, man, we're in an age of college football where I think coaching matters more. I think development matters more. I think figuring out a way to scratch out close wins matters a lot. Like, I mean, if you're North Carolina, I mean, you follow them. I mean, you're a legacy there. Your mom went to North Carolina. Your brother goes to North Carolina.
Didn't get in North Carolina.
They had, you know, play better football for the, you know, 3 or 4 games this year they could have won. You know, like 2 or 3 or 4 football games they win this year if they just play better, if they just have a better plan, if they execute better. So it's not like they were out-talented in every one of their losses. They just – I think if you can get a coach that can prepare a team to beat another team on a weekly basis and do a good job of that, I think you've got a chance to climb into this thing and be in the discussion. And you know, I don't blame them for going to Bill Belichick to do that. I don't think, you know, I know Glenn Schumann talked to them in this whole thing. I don't think Glenn Schumann was ever a serious candidate for this job. I mean, just based on kind of the things I've heard, he impressed them, but I don't think that's quite what they were looking for. I think they liked what Mac Brown brought there to begin with, just in terms of stability and focus, but it, you know, eventually didn't work out. So they're going to try to bring a guy in there that's going to bring even more attention to detail. And, I'm not ready to say it sucks on the front end.
Yeah, no, I think it's an interesting one. It's very boom or bust of, hey, either, you know, this is going to work really well or, you know, everybody's going down with it. And, you know, I think if you're the AD there in Chapel Hill, it's a, or shall we call it Chapel Bill now? I think that it's a move that says, you know, hey, we are investing in football. And you cannot deny that we're not investing in football anymore. And either he's gonna you know, ride the success of it, or he's gonna go out just like he would have gone out with a you know, just making a traditional hire that would have been criticized of. Oh well, you know, look, Carolina's not. You know, and I think if UNC goes out and they hire a Glenn Schumann, it's a very good move. I don't think that it's looked at as like, hey, this could change the trajectory of the program forever. And that's nothing against Glenn Schumann. I just don't think that's the kind of move that makes shockwaves in college football like Bill Belichick would, though.
You call it boom or bust, and there's this idea that it's super volatile. And I don't necessarily buy into that either. Like, I mean, I think it could very well be a very mediocre, very solid, sometimes good, sometimes a little bit below average type thing where they low floor, low ceiling, and it just, you know, you play it out for a couple of years and Bill's like, I can't can't take this anywhere. And then, you know, North Carolina's like, yeah, we don't think so either. We're going to get younger. And then they move on. But I don't think it necessarily has to be a disaster or a resounding success. I just think it's just one of those deals. I don't necessarily want to discount it on the front end because I know he's a good coach, and I feel like coaching matters these days. And so does talent acquisition. He's going to get a big pool of money to work with, and that's via transfer portal or recruiting. And we're on day four of the transfer portal window right now, Palmer. Georgia's offered a quarterback. We don't know how serious they're going to go after him. Deshaun Purdy from Charlotte. He's a really good athlete, but kind of had a mediocre true freshman season. So, you know, take that into account. They've targeted several wide receivers at this point. We don't know what's going to go on with Eric Singleton and whether or not he's going to visit Georgia. You know, kind of coming out of the gate there, he set one up quick, and then Georgia wanted to push it back. And now I don't know when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen. Dane Key and C.J. Daniels, I'm told, are supposed to be in town next week. So those are two kind of split-in wide outs. Pete Nakos has put in a prediction for Georgia to land Dane Key out of Kentucky. But one thing we're not hearing much on, though, Palmer, is defensive line. And, you know, we know Georgia wants to add at least one defensive lineman, maybe more with Ja Jarrett announcing intentions to enter the portal. So we're hearing more about cornerbacks. We've heard three cornerback names to this point. That's just so weird to me. It's just so odd to me how, you know, cornerback is not a big, you know, and they've gone after some safeties too, but, you know, there's Bryce Pollock. There's a kid from Washington State that they looked at, the O'Connor kid, and another cornerback from, I believe, out in the Pac-12 as well. So there's just been a lot of
They've got the Florida corner, Jakeem Jackson.
Jakeem Jackson. Yeah, Florida corner. That's it. Jakeem Jackson, who is from LSU originally, would be on his third team in 3 years if he were to – or is going to be on his third team in 3 years when he transfers.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I think that when you look at Georgia and its corner situation, they didn't really add a ton at corner in this high school recruiting class. And they obviously lost Shamari Earls there later in that cycle. And I think that, you know, maybe this is their effort to go replace a guy like that in terms of the numbers. They made an effort for DJ Pickett. They you know, looked at Dejan Lee, you know, didn't land either of those guys. Now, obviously, they got Dominic Kelly to reclass. But, you know, I think that might be the explanation of corner is you look at the guys that are on the roster still. You've got Dalen Everett, who could go pro. You've got Daniel Harris, who doesn't have an option. It's either Georgia or Portal. Ellis Robinson, same deal. DeMello Jones, Andre Evans. You've got five. Am I forgetting anybody?
No, then you signed two. You signed Jonte Gilbert and
Dominic Kelly.
Dominic Kelly, right.
So
you don't really know if either one of those guys has any chance. At least with Shamari Earls, you had an SEC ready, 6'2", 200-pound cornerback, SEC ready body.
And I mean, look, Kelly is a reclass. I highly doubt that they are counting on him to be a player. So
Ryan Williams is a reclass.
It's fair. I got no rebuttal to that one, Jake. I don't think that Dominic Kelly is going to be the Ryan Williams of college football. If he is, I think all of us will be very excited to cover that. And that is not a shot at Dominic Kelly. But I think that, you know, if you look at it, you've got the seven. And, you know, I think Dalen Everett is putting together a really strong case to go pro. We've seen those Georgia corners that have started 2 years go pro after 2 years and you know, declare early for the draft, whether it was Keely Ringo or Kamari Lassiter. Those guys have done that. My gut prediction is that Dalen Everett goes pro. Now, if Georgia gets Dalen Everett back, we very well might hear all this smoke of Georgia and corners in the portal fade. But I do think that might be the explanation of, hey, you've got six that you feel, or you've got seven. You may lose one. You may lose two. Who knows? I mean, you very well could lose another one to the portal. You obviously already lost Julian Humphrey. somebody that was supposed to be on this roster for next season as well. So just in terms of replacing numbers, that's kind of where I think the interest at corner. And look, it may not be serious interest. It may be just, you know, poking around at some players. I mean, Bryce Pollock is a Peach State native. Jakeem Jackson is a former top 100 prospect. If you can add guys like that to your roster, guys that are either very talented or, you know, have a desire to come back closer to home. And look, Pollock is a, you know, talented player that had some success against Georgia. If you can add guys like that, you don't really turn away the opportunity, you know, just in terms of depth at a position where, you know, one pulled hamstring, you know, two pulled hamstrings, and all of a sudden you're very down in terms of numbers. That's also a special teams position. Wide receiver, you know, the CJ Daniels, Dane Key, Eric Singleton stuff. I absolutely think Georgia is taking a wide receiver at least, if not multiple, probably multiple. I mean, they've shown us that they will take multiple in the portal. So, yeah, I mean, I like what I've seen. You know, I was a big Dane Key fan from his freshman year on at Kentucky. You know, I very much liked Barry and Brown there as well. But, you know, that duo that they had has given Georgia some trouble. And I think that, you know, we've seen Georgia go after guys that they've played against. And Dane Key certainly fits that mold. Eric Singleton fits that mold. Very interested to see kind of the direction that the receiver recruiting goes, knowing that they took five in the high school class, knowing that they've got some talented guys there, but knowing that they've also got a lot that they could lose.
Yeah, there's a lot going out the door. And I always like to go back to, okay, what were we talking about when we were, you're looking at this season, talking about the room? We were talking about in like July. And what we're talking about in like July or maybe even before that, I can't remember when the rah-rah stuff went down.
It was the very end of July, right before fall camp.
Right. So before that, you were talking about looking at this wide receiver room. You had Rah-Rah Thomas. You had Colby Young. You had Arian Smith, who does have a year of eligibility left, but this is year five. And then you've got Dominic Lovett. So you really felt like those four were
Michael
probably –
Michael Jackson,
right, who's gone now anyway, but he redshirted. So those five, really. And so you had five guys in that room that you were going to leave. And then you had Dylan Bell, who he didn't have the season you wanted him to have so that he could have thought about really going pro. I think, you know, if Dylan Bell leaves Georgia, it's probably going to be the transfer portal. And I don't, you know, haven't heard anything about that being the case necessarily. So there's always rumors. So I feel like you look at that room and you knew like five were going out and you weren't going to replace five seniors with five freshmen. Like, I mean, yeah, they've got five freshmen coming in, but that's not, you know,
the impact.
Two, maybe three of those guys will have an impact, and maybe one, maximum two, will have a heavy impact. And if you're a Georgia fan out there and you're saying, yeah, we don't have, you know, freshman receivers don't do anything here, that's a load of crap, okay? Because Jermaine Burton in 2020 almost set a single game Georgia receiving record, by the way. Jermaine Burton in 2020. George Pickens in 2019, George Pickens and Dominic Blaylock in 2019. Now, that offense wasn't any good. But you had Jermaine Burton in 2020, you had A.D. Mitchell in 2021, and you had Dylan Bell in 2022. So last year was really the first year that you haven't had a freshman kind of step in and play a bigger role, because Georgia had, you know, kind of, you know, developed over time a little bit of depth, and they had brought
and
in.
And also went out and got experienced talent.
Yeah, they went out and got a couple, but they also had, you know, like last year, Ladd had kind of built up, and Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint had built up, and Dylan Bell had built up. So it was kind of tougher for a freshman to get on the field in that scenario, whereas the previous groups were a little thinner. You know, Arian Smith was another guy. So ultimately, you know, listen, I think that Taylen Taylor, CJ Wiley, Landon Roldan, Thomas Blackshear, you know, Tyler Williams, I think, you know, you're going to get a couple, two or three of those guys that are going to get a chance to play meaningful minutes, but you've still got to go out there and offset losing five seniors, two of whom you've already lost to this point.
Yeah.
And you got to go out there and you got to offset that now.
And in terms of those, Dominic Lovett has no eligibility left.
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so he's gone. Definitely gone. Yeah, and Michael
you're Jackson. Definitely losing three in terms of Jackson and Lovett and Ra-Ra Thomas, who was dismissed.
And very likely and very well could lose Colby Young. There has been a little bit of chatter there that he might try to get an extra year of eligibility because of the legal search situation and how it's all playing out. But
he's played in five games, and so if he doesn't get a waiver approved,
yeah,
he's gone.
you're gonna have to assume that he's gone unless you just know, you know, unless you have some good information on the front end, and we don't, so we're gonna have to assume he's gone. So yeah, you have to kind of go in and offset some of that, and then you have some guys returning like Nitro Tuggle who decided moments after we finished recording Dogs HQ Plus to come back, which was awesome of him. We appreciate that. No, but you got Nitro Tuggle, you got Sakovi White, who honestly, like whenever, you know, you start talking about transfer portal stuff, that Kevin Concepcion kid, like I'm not that interested. I'm not that interested if I'm Georgia. He's a good player, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I'm ready to move on to Sakovi White and go with a guy that's been in my offense for a year and showed some flashes, maybe had some trouble staying healthy as a freshman. I think you roll with him in the slot, or if you can keep Anthony Evans around. Which is probably going to be a little bit of a challenge itself, you know, body language wise, from what we've seen. So, you know, those guys are the guys you're looking at in the slot. I feel like they're looking more at outside receiver.
Logan,
I like
Haynes is a guy that could play in the slot too. I mean, sure, he's longer, but he's got that quick twitchiness to him.
Yeah, he does. So there's just a lot of moving parts here. I think Georgia's going to focus more on the outside receiver positions. And I don't think they're looking 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", but I do think they want to get bigger. You know, get those guys that can make contested catches, get those guys that, and Dane Key is one of those, you know, dudes, and, you know, dropped two balls this year, dropped one ball as a freshman, had a little bit of a rough sophomore campaign, dropped six. So it brings some sure handedness maybe to that X receiver position for Georgia. And I'm interested to see what they do on the D line. I thought they would make a move last year. They didn't.
Well, they got Xavier McLeod.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. I thought they would make a big move last year.
A big move, right.
And Xavier McLeod.
And that McLeod move has very much paid off. Especially
it has. He had a wonderful SEC championship.
He was big early on. He was big early on when they were, you know, in need of some guys. And you know, big now.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, if you can get a break, you can get Christian Miller to come back. You get Ty Ingram Dawkins to come back, who graduated. And usually when a kid graduates and walks at senior day, I assume he's leaving, but I'm sure they're going to work on him. But if they could get Ty Ingram Dawkins and Christian Miller to come back with Jeremiah Hall, Xavier McLeod, and then some of those youngsters that
Jordan
they've got.
Hall.
Jordan Hall, yeah. I don't know why I call him. There was a Jeremiah Hall at some point. I might have went to high school with that kid. But anyway, name seems familiar. You know, you put him in there with Jordan Thomas, and Nnamdi Igboko and Nasir Johnson. Maybe they don't go to the portal, at least not for big numbers. I think a lot of it may end up depending on what Ja Jarrett decides to do. I think they may be a little bit more liberal in who they decide to take if Ja Jarrett does indeed, you know, enter the portal and close it down.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that defensive line is certainly, I mean, like you said, it was one that we were all watching last year for the big splash. Xavier McLeod wasn't a big splash, but he was a, you know, big impact, you know, big in terms of the numbers. I mean, they needed a guy, you know, in whatever way, shape or form they could get him. And he's been big, and he's big because he's a multi-year guy, you know, in all likelihood. So, you know, I think that, you know, or will they go out and they get a big splash, big name, a Walter Nolan type impact? You know, I don't think that he's going to be in the portal. I think that he's probably going to be in the draft, if anything. You know, but that type of player that Ole Miss was able to go out and get. And I, you know, Jake, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen one of those guys go in yet.
Yeah, and I don't know that Georgia would. I mean, they're definitely not going to get into a Walter Nolan type situation because.
But in terms of that kind of impact, I mean, he came in. Yeah. And was an immediate. He was a big name in the portal and was an immediate impact at Ole Miss on a college football player.
Yeah, we haven't seen that. Yeah, we haven't seen that type enter the portal time. I know that Kentucky had a D lineman enter the portal, and I think it came out quickly that he was looking for number one D line money. And
like
I don't know.
Keyshawn Silver.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to get that, but. Yeah, D-line market gets a little crazy because folks get desperate. They get desperate in that D-line market. All right, NFHS, we're desperate for some high school football, and the state championship games are this weekend. And state of Georgia.
They're not this weekend. They're Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I believe.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah.
But you've got state championships around the country.
Yeah, state championships around the country this week. GHSA is early next week. Listen, NFHS has got you covered. The most extensive database of high school live events, on demand, replays, clips. You can do it all through NFHS. We love following Georgia targets, Georgia recruits, and just the teams we love, the high schools we came from on NFHS. It's a wonderful way to keep up with what's going on in high school sports, and it's not just football. It's tennis, it's softball, it's basketball, it's volleyball, it's all sorts of sports, and you can check it out. You can see relatives play from across the country, friends, kids playing championship games. It's amazing, and I have it is all over my browser history for this entire football season, months and months, all the time, going back and looking at games on demand, going back and looking at replays. I've been all over it, and you need to go check out NFHS. If you use the code GoDogs25, it is, or is it Dogs25? Did we mess it up again?
I don't know, Jake. I'm going to look it up.
Try them both.
I'm pretty sure it's GoDogs25.
GoDogs25. Go check out, go try GoDogs25 as a promo code. You'll get 25% off of your first month. Save a little cash, test it out, see what you can do with NFHS and see how much you can entertain yourself, because it's great. Jake,
that on-demand feature seems really interesting now, especially now that Georgia's got its signing class in.
Yeah.
And like you said, you can go back and you can watch games of Talon Taylor. You can go back and watch games of, you know, Landon Roldan. Some of those receivers that we were just talking about, certainly a interesting feature there. And the promo code, we are doing this live. I'm looking it up live. It is GoDogs25.
GoDogs25.
GoDawgs25. 25% off your first month.
All right. GoDogs25. Go get it. All right. What's new with Carson Beck? Okay, Monday. What did they say, Palmer? What was the update on Monday?
Well, we got a couple of updates Monday. One from our Pete Nakos was that he had suffered a UCL injury. I think that was kind of the consensus out there, but you know that was confirmed by Pete or reported by Pete and that he was seeking multiple opinions, second opinions that you know in terms of. And listening into what Pete had to say, I heard some of it on Monday. As they were doing a portal show with Andy and Ari. He popped in there. JD Pakel popped in there. But, you know, Pete was saying that there was a situation where, you know, maybe you're looking at what the extent of the damage is. Is it completely torn? Is it partially torn? Is it bruised, like has been reported elsewhere? What is the extent of that UCL injury? Georgia confirmed that it is an elbow injury, you know, which would UCL would fall under that. And that at this time they are seeking, you know, treatment and seeking, you know, that there's no timetable for his return. That's the update with Carson Beck from Monday from Georgia. And it's been all quiet since then. Brett Thorson, I may as well throw this in while we're talking about injuries and then that update that we got Monday. He will be out for the season. Georgia's starting punter. Maybe All-American, All-SEC caliber punter. You know, somebody that was a finalist for the Ray Guy Award. You know, he's going to be out for the season. So, going to be interesting to see where Georgia turns, how that plays out at the punter position. But obviously, quarterback is the one that everyone is watching and anxiously awaiting updates.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I'm going to say this, you know, Rusty and I talked about it on Plus, and anytime you hear seeking second opinions, it just rarely turns out that guy gets the second opinion that he wants.
It means that the first opinion wasn't what you wanted.
Yeah, it's typically, that's definitely the way it feels. So it becomes kind of tough to, you know, really, based on what you've seen before, it becomes really tough to have any sort of a lot of optimism about it. But I'll say this too. If this is a sprain, if it's a bruise, if it's a tiny tear, you know, because I spoke with an orthopedic surgeon I spoke with Dr. Patterson over at Northeast Georgia Health Systems and Northeast Georgia Orthopedic Care. And he told me that basically when you're talking about these injuries, you're talking about two separate injuries. You're talking about complete injuries, which are tears, or full-fledged obvious tears and full tears and things of that nature. Or you're talking about incomplete injuries, which is like, you know, minor tears and sprains and stretching of the ligament. Either way you look at it, you're probably looking at 3 or 4 weeks before he starts throwing again, best case. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks at least before he's starting throwing again. And then you've got to kind of get the arm back in shape and get all of that going. And again, that's best case scenario. That's like the most minor of stretching of that ligament, no tearing at all. There's a full spectrum of things that could happen within that injury. And ultimately, that's kind of what they're dealing with right now. And I think they're trying to figure out, all right, does this thing need to be operated on? And if it doesn't need to be operated on, how quickly can you get it, you know, well enough to be effective and to be the quarterback that Georgia's going to want him to be? If I had to guess, I would say Carson Beck is not going to play in the Sugar Bowl. If I had to predict it right now, I would say Gunnar Stockton, as Georgia's starting quarterback, plays every snap of the Sugar Bowl.
Has Carson Beck played his last snap at Georgia?
I don't know. I'm not ready to say
either Georgia doesn't advance from the Sugar Bowl, or Georgia, you know, doesn't turn to him in the Orange Bowl on what, January 9th?
We're about 5 weeks away from the national championship game, and then we're about, what is it, about four and a half weeks away from the second round. So I don't know, man. That's the hard part. Is it all depends on how, but I feel quite
confident. Exactly 4 weeks away from that second game for Georgia, yeah. January 9th in Miami.
So I feel very confident that he won't play in the Sugar Bowl. And I'm not ready to say anything else beyond that, but just my read on the situation, my gut feeling on the situation, kind of putting it all together, it all kind of matches up, which is I just think Carson Beck's out for the Sugar Bowl. And I don't think that surprises anybody. I think a lot of people are already discussing Gunnar Stockton scenarios and how that all plays out. I'm sure Georgia's just going to get him ready to play. And if somehow number 15 trots back out there feeling great like Willis Reed, they're probably going to welcome him back with open arms. But, you know, I think Georgia, they believe in Gunnar Stockton, and I'm interested to see how Gunnar looks with a full kind of head of steam to prepare going into a week, a game plan, something that he's drilled into himself.
Not just a week. I mean, he'll have gotten multiple weeks of it, and I think that's so huge. In terms of, you go back and you watch Gunnar in high school where he was a record-setting player, you know, he's confident. I think that he showed signs of confidence, especially when it came to his ability with his legs on last Saturday. I think in terms of, you know, his arm, he's got some zip to his passes. I think if he can push the ball downfield, Georgia's offense will be much better. When you were a situation where
I've had this thought that if Georgia could come out and get kind of this run game shot play offense going, and kind of get a rhythm and get a boost and get some confidence. I know they've struggled to catch the football, but if they could get that going and they caught everything.
Arian Smith didn't struggle to catch it with Gunnar.
Well, Arian Smith hasn't struggled to catch it in the second half with Carson either. I know. He just decided to drop, you know, everything Carson throws at him in the first two quarters for whatever reason. What we saw in the SEC championship game is vintage Arian Smith. It's, hey, let's do something in the second half that makes you forget about the fact that I let it fall on the ground twice in the first.
Let's make some plays that aren't going to go show up on stat sheets or whatever in terms of a big receiver day. Let's recover a fumble. Let's make a, you know, big special teams play. That's vintage Arian Smith, like you said.
Yeah, that's him all the way.
Now, two questions for you, Jake, and they both pertain to this quarterback situation. One, if it is Gunnar, how much do you see the run game, the quarterback run game, being involved in that, you know, that run shot offense that you envision? Because I think it should be, but I think it's hard to when you know, as you've pointed out on our message board, you're talking about a situation where you're turning to a quarterback that, you know, a backup quarterback, if Gunnar has to go out, that hasn't played a single snap.
Yeah. It's tough to operate your offense that way. I mean, it really is. Because we're not just saying, I'm not sitting here saying I don't think Ryan Puglisi is talented enough to come in there, but we're talking about zero snaps. Guy didn't have any spring practice or barely had any spring practice, didn't have a spring game. And, you know, he's ahead of Jaden Rashada. He's picked up the offense quicker than Rashada has. Been around a little bit longer, year younger, but it's been around Georgia's offense a little bit longer since January. That's going to be hard, man. That's a very hard decision that Kirby and Mike Bobo have to make. And I think you just kind of have to be smart with it. I think you have to kind of pick your spots. And I think Gunner's got to run smart with it.
And that's the other part of it is they may not have much of a choice because
Gunner's got some Wile E. Coyote in him, man. Like if you look back to some Jaden Daniels, if you look back to the Orange Bowl, you want to talk about a guy that's like, hey, I want to get on as many big hit compilations as I possibly can. That's Gunner Stockton.
Yeah. The second question in all of this is, do you think there's any shot Carson comes back like next season? Because I've heard some of that. I don't see it.
I mean, there's a shot, but it's not going to happen. I mean, at some point, I think something that folks lose in this whole thing is, yeah, they are, making money now and they have a cool life and they get to do some things. But at some point you get to be 22, 23, 24 years old and you're hanging around 17 and 18 year olds and it just doesn't. It's just time to move on. It's time to move on and do adult things and try your hand. It may not be the smartest decision sometimes. We've seen Stetson Bennett and Michael Penix and Bo Nix and all these guys stick around as long as they possibly can, and it worked out quite well for those guys. But I don't think Carson does that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's just it's one of those things where, Carson said back in, almost a year ago when he decided to come back in, last January, Carson said, I'm coming back for one last year. And that doesn't mean that he has to. He's got another year of eligibility. He can change his mind. Nobody's going to fight him on it. But I would be very surprised if Carson Beck comes back this year. I will say, though, we'll be back on Sunday night. We'll be back with you here on the Georgia Show where we're going to talk about God knows what happens between here and there. We no idea. All we know is that when we talk to you on Sunday night, Georgia will still be headed to the Sugar Bowl. And Georgia will not have played a very frustrating or gut-wrenching or –
Georgia's not going to overtime this weekend, Jake.
Yeah, exactly. Georgia is not going to overtime this weekend. And
maybe the basketball team will. Grand Canyon Saturday. Big game.
Basketball team's off to a good start, man. Basketball's off to a good start. Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. But we'll be back with you on Sunday. We'll be back with you later on in that week, too, multiple times. And we're going to prepare you for this Sugar Bowl. And really excited here in about 8 days. We're going to get to watch. We're going to get to watch and see who Georgia's second round opponent is. Is it going to be Notre Dame? Is it going to be Indiana? I got a feeling that matchup is going to come up on next Thursday's show. We're going to say, who had you rather play? We'll tell you right now, it's Indiana. Y'all take it easy.